This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, wrapping up two programs worth of discussion with a spirited 93-year-old named Augie Palercio. If you catch him at that roadside stand in Fresno where he sells produce and fresh eggs from all those chickens of his, ask him about his days in the Marine Corps, and maybe you'll even get a little more out of him than I have. I often mention on this program that Hometown Heroes can be educational, and I try to provide context when I can that puts these first-person accounts in perspective. But when I say I learn something new every week, here's an example. Have you ever heard of Operation Beleaguer before? Well, I hadn't either, but Augie was part of it. After the end of World War II, for nearly 4 years, American forces were in China trying to repatriate and evacuate foreign nationals and hoping to broker a peace between Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists and, of course, Mao Zedong and the communists. That peace never materialized. The Korean War would eventually ensue. But there were Americans killed in that interwar period. Augie, during that time, was flying Corsairs over China, and it was during this time that he lost his beloved wingman. You talked about McMasters, and I got the idea that you two were pretty close.
Mac, it was right there. He was a good, not only that, but he was a good pilot. Him and Teague was good. I was the test pilot. And if there were two planes to be tested, I'd get one of them to, not at the same time, at different times. And the way we tested them, we get up there and get into a dogfight. And the way you got into a dogfight, you got up to, say, 10,000 feet. And then the guy you're fighting with is down to 9,500. You come in like this. And the start of the fight is when you get one above the other, and then you go at it. Usually you go this way and he'll go this way, yeah. And you end up going straight down, and he's going straight down on his side. Only thing to do is to try to pull up, get your airplane up, and try to get in back of him. Because, no, we're not using lead. We're using gun cameras.
Right.
There's always a show to take the cameras into the ready room and play them out.
Was there some trash talking? Did you guys kid each other and tease each other and say, I'm better than you?
No. It was all friendly, but it was serious. I tell you, it was serious because we're both learning. My favorite trick was to dip the wings to the right, but then throw the airplane to the left. Get on your back and start pulling out, and you go out, blackout. Yeah. But the airplane's all trimmed up, so when it turns over coming down, and then it straightens itself up, and you're coming straight up. So then you're pushing the blood up to your head.
I don't know if I could handle that. I bring up McMasters again, because you mentioned that he was killed while you were still flying over there. How was he killed, and how did that affect you?
Bad. They tell me I just about started a third world war with China. We were there patrolling the Yukes River to be sure China wasn't sending troops and ammunition over the river to North Korea. And that's where we just patrolled the river, just looking for troop movement. One time we had a pretty heavy load, both of us, and I could see he was having trouble catching up to me, so the only thing I could do is throttle a little bit and then start a gentle left turn. That way that gave him a chance to cut inside of that turn. And so just as he came up, I signaled to him to get to my right wing. And as he went underneath me, come over here, evidently somebody fired a missile. They were probably aiming for my airplane. But by then, I put it in the left turn, and it got Mac, and it blew him clear out of the sky. And I guess they say I must have went crazy, because that river and those rice paddies, they really caught hell that day. I was looking for, but I never did spot him. But that doesn't mean I had any ammo left over, because anything that moved was a target. And of course, that right after that, they shipped me back to the States. You had more than your share of war. Get out of here. So that was my last combat one. But we weren't at war with China. We weren't at war with North Korea. We were just being busybodies. And our orders were, you can't shoot unless you're being shot at and hit. It was a no-no to come back with a report that you fired your weapons. You didn't have any holes in the airplane. I was going to stay in, and Loris, that was my wife, it was okay for me to stay in, but she wanted me to quit flying. Golly, Loris, they can't do that. I'd never live. So I got out. And then the one and only time I ever really got into trouble with my wife, something else that you won't believe. I got into trouble with my wife, don't forget.
Well, I can't believe you only got into trouble once with your wife. That's the hard part to believe.
Just one time. And it wasn't over a woman. You'll never guess what it was for. I had too much money in my pocket. Before I got out, there was a lot of bootleg going on in the service. We'd fly whiskey across the border, $50 a fifth, and then the Marine Corps was paying for it. But I finally told her, and what made her, I don't know whether you can say mad or so upset with me, is you lied to me. You tried to lie your way out of it. But instead of that, you went back out here to flying, and you were crop dusting. And you should have, if that's the case, you should have stayed in the Marine Corps. Anyway, I finally talked her out of it, and she stayed with me for 61 years.
Yeah, and there were a lot of things you had to survive just to make it home and marry her. On the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you will find a wedding photo of Augie and Loris. You two waited until after World War II to get married.
I know a number of times we talked about getting married. Well, she would bring it up, and I said, no, because I might not make it, and there's no need of you being a widow before you even...
Well, I only bring it up because... You've got three children and you've got grandchildren. And does that get your attention a little bit to think about that? That none of them would be here if you didn't survive all those things that you told me about in the war?
I don't know.
I'm sure that's not something you think about a lot.
I was thinking about them while I was existing.
Yeah. Well, I think they're pretty thankful you made it home. A couple other things. Were there some pilots that you really looked up to? Guys that you thought were really heroic or brave or skilled?
Oh, yeah. You know, I can't brag enough about Teague or McMasters. They were good pilots that when I signaled we were going to attack those, just the two of us were going to attack those seven or eight Japanese fighters and bombers. They finally saw that we were going to, so fine, they did their job. But once we got out of the airplanes on the ground, then it was just two individuals. And you can say whatever you want to, right or wrong, it made no difference. He let me know what he thought.
Yeah, you told me about that, that he said it was no fun being brave, and maybe he added in an extra word or two that we can't air on the radio. You know, I've added a video on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page of Augie walking us through the flight suit that he still has and all the different elements of it. But let's talk about it here on the radio.
Don't ask me about this flight suit, Jack. That's a G suit. If you don't know what I mean, that's okay.
Explain it to us.
I stole it from the Navy. I was assigned to one of the carriers, either the Ranger or the Wright. And by then, I was a buck sergeant. And I got acquainted with a chief in the Navy chief. He was a pilot, and he was wearing one. And I asked him about it, and he says, you guys don't have them yet. It's just strictly a Navy issue. And I said, can we buy one? Buy one. Where would I get the money if he'd have said yes? But we asked him what we can do about getting one. He says, well, I can put one down, and you could pick it up and walk off with it. Take your chances on getting caught. So I did. Just that simple.
Well, hopefully the statute of limitations is up, and they won't be listening to this.
Yeah, well, if the Navy could find out the things that we got away with, well, we'd never get out of it.
Well, let's talk about your jacket instead then, because I know you got that fair and square. The Marine Corps gave it to you. And you talk about standing the test of time. I know I've mentioned it more than usual today, but you really need to go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and see this photo of Augie with his jacket on. It's a photo that Gene Day took on the Central Valley Honor Flight trip to Washington, D.C. Augie is sitting in front of the Freedom Wall at the National World War II Memorial, where that array of gold stars represents the more than 400,000 Americans who never came home from World War II. And he's wearing this brown jacket that reminds Augie of how close he came to adding to that number. On the right breast of the jacket is a 70-year-old patch from Marine Scout Bomber Squadron 144. It features a shirtless Native American with a bomb tucked under his left arm. The number 144 is on the bomb, and a Sioux word is printed underneath it. Augie will tell us what that means. And on the other side of his jacket, it's another patch featuring a woman leaning forward off the angled wing of a Corsair. It says, Fighting 311 and Hell's Bells. That's Bells, B-E-L-L-E-S, thus the woman. When Augie returned from that honor flight, he had this very jacket on. And when I told the big crowd at Fresno Yosemite International Airport about the jacket's background, a really loud cheer went up and a grin stretched ear to ear on Augie's 93-year-old face. So look up the photo online, get a taste of what that jacket looks like. And of course, I had to ask Augie about what role that jacket played in the incident where he was shot down and had to be rescued from the water near Munda.
Wearing it in the water.
So you're wearing this flight jacket in the water.
Yeah.
What's the insignia there? The patch on your chest there? What does that signify?
Oh, this is the one for the dive bomber. That's the 144. That's the number of the squadron. And that Helsinki means warrior. Mm-hmm. And this other one over here, it was strictly a fighter squadron. It's 311. See, then I was in, as a test pilot, I was working with both squadrons, 311 and 312. Knowing Augie, I would always finagle flights in both.
So you had this jacket on. What's it made out of?
It was supposed to be goat skin. And I always maintain this is one of the best jackets I've ever owned. It always knew, as far as I'm concerned, if it was hot, it would keep me cool. If it was cold, it would keep me hot. Now, you don't have to believe that. That's okay with me. But it'll help me. That's that jacket.
So you survived all those hours in the water with that jacket on. And then you wore that on another flight you took a while back.
Yeah, no, after that they're dried out. I blew it every day.
And on the Central Valley Honor Flight, I saw you wearing that too. When you went to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yeah, I was wearing it, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when we were talking about it, there again, one guy comes out and he says, yeah, and the amazing thing about it, Augie, it still fits you.
What does that jacket mean to you? When you look at it or you put it on, what does it remind you of?
Life or death, that jacket seemed more, there's no way of me telling you how much. I don't think once I got that jacket, I ever flew without it. Because especially in a dive bomber, you're in the open. You're always wearing underclothes, they weren't shorts, they were whole body ones. And that was for keeping you warm because it does get cold up there.
Sure. Going on the honor flight with all those other veterans to Washington, D.C., to see that World War II memorial with all those gold stars on it.
Yeah.
And you've told us about some of the guys that you lost, that Riddle the gunner and Mac, your wingman. Were you thinking about those guys when you looked at all those gold stars?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's an awful lot of men.
What did that trip mean to you? What did you get out of it?
Well, it helped way convince me that people do care. Lots of times, people don't care. It's been a long time since I've heard of somebody burning a flag. I hope I don't ever have to watch somebody do that. Like they accused me of starting World War III with China. I'd be starting a war with that guy one way or another. You don't have to have a weapon when you're in the Marine Corps. what is your main job? Let's be real honest about it. My main job was to kill a man. Or in those days, there wasn't any women. Nowadays, it's you kill a man or a woman. You don't have to have a weapon to do it. And you're trained to do it. That's why I think we have so many people turn out to be outlaws. I maintain that the way to stop all wars, get all the countries to agree to this, if the United States want to have a war with China, get the politicians from Washington and the politicians from China and put them on a big island, one on each side, and give them all the ammunition they want. Then at the end of 30 days, if either one of them wants a war, I'll join it.
Well, I have a feeling there is more than one veteran out there nodding his head in agreement with you on that one. Augie, thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing that one-of-a-kind story with us. Augie Palercio, 93 years old, and next time on Hometown Heroes, we're going to meet a man who was born and raised in the Philippines, joined the U.S. Army there before the Japanese attacked, ended up on the Bataan Death March, and escaped the Death March with the help of some folks he certainly thinks of as heroes. He lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico now, and what a story he has. We're going to hear it next time on Hometown Heroes, but we're out of time for this episode. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you one more time that freedom is not free.